Greetings, I'm Fred Zaspel. Welcome to another author interview here at Books at a Glance. We're talking again, Dr. Steve Wellham, about the first volume of his systematic theology. He has worked walking us through it, and we are still now in chapter 18, taking our time with each of these major attributes of God that we've been looking at. We come now to the attribute of God's omnipotence. Steve, the meaning of omnipotence means all powerful. Popularly, God can do anything, but you want to tweak that just a bit. So explain that for us.
Yeah, no, we have to tweak it because our definitions or our understanding of God's attributes have to be defined by scripture, right? They are not defined by, a philosophical dictionary or, an English dictionary. I remember hearing years ago Francis Schaeffer say, you have to be very careful what you mean by an infinite God. We don't mean it in certain senses and we mean it in another sense, right? And scripture defines that. And omnipotence is one of those areas. If you say just sort of by definition, omnipotence, all powerful, and then you start drawing conclusions, well, God can do anything. Well, it sounds reasonable, but the problem is that conflicts with the God of Scripture, because the God of Scripture is all powerful, but he's all powerful tied to his very being and nature. And of course, this gets into his willing of things, his exercise of power. His will is tied to who he is, his being, his attributes, his character. He does not do things that are contrary to him, right? And of course, this is where you have, philosophy 101. You take these courses in the university or something, and they try to stump you and say, well, can God make stones big enough that he can't lift them? And
yeah,
can he lie, or can he sin? Well, if he can't sin, you have these skeptics. Well, then he's not omnipotent. And if he can't make stones too big that he can't lift them, then there's a dilemma here.
And all of Christianity is supposed to collapse now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I tell students, don't follow the definition, some definition of the unbeliever that's not being tethered by scripture. That's not how the Bible defines omnipotence, right? So omnipotence always has to be tied to God's will, tied to his being. God does all things consistent with himself, right? And he has all power consistent with his being and character and will and so on. So that's how you have to define omnipotence.
Differentiate God's absolute power from his ordained power.
Yeah, I mean, this is a distinction that comes where God does all things consistent with his will and character, absolute power, but then he also chooses to create a universe. He has a divine plan. In that plan, you have the execution of that plan. So his ordained power is tied to the ordination, the execution of his power in relation to the plan, and the outworking of that plan. So this is where God can choose to exercise power and choose not to exercise power. And absolute power speaks of it in terms of the totality of his power. Ordained power is tied to the execution of it in relation to the divine plan.
Okay, next we come to God's epistemological attributes. And before we start looking into those, omniscience, foreknowledge, and so on, remind us what you mean by this category and what it includes.
Yeah, so again, I stepped away, not denying the traditional way of distinguishing God's attributes of incommunicable, communicable. That's long history.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make another point that in metaphysical attributes is what we've been looking at, God's very being, these attributes that are totally unique to him, and this is the kind of being he is. Then to epistemological just picks up the knowledge, right? So God, in epistemology, we study, how do we know what we know, and why do we believe what we believe, and what's the warrant for all that study of knowledge? Well, epistemological attributes are those attributes that are which make God the source and standard of truth, right? So I, and then the moral attributes, the source and standard of goodness and justice and rightness. So I wanted to divide them that way because God is the source and standard of our existence, of our knowledge, and of all ground for ethics. And of course, that ties into my attempt to sort of move from also theology to sort of worldview formation, so that in philosophy you have these three divisions: metaphysics, epistemology, and ethics. Well, as Christians, we think about those areas, but God is the ground to all those areas. So in epistemological attributes, in omniscience, I mean, this is incommunicable, right? Because you and I will never have omniscience. The dream of idolatrous humanity is to have omniscience, right? And they're going to try to create it by AI or something like that, with
Right.
all the computers running. We will remake man and so on. Yet only God knows everything, completely tied to his own purposes, his own plan. He knows everything exhaustively. He knows all things, past, present, future. I mean, now we're tying it to even the world that he has made. He's ordained all things, and we'll talk later about that decree. But omniscience means he knows all that's possible to know, which includes all things past, all things present, all things future. And of course, that's why there is such a thing as objective truth, because God is a source and standard of truth. He's a source and standard of knowledge, right? He's not caught by surprise. He's not learning. He's not developing. He's not like the open theists, making ad hoc plans in human history dependent upon our choices. No, God is the one who knows the end from the beginning, and he is the one who ordains the end from the beginning. Of course, that will lead to differences with Arminian theology.
All right, we have a distinction here again with how omniscience is popularly defined and described, and the way you want to say it. In fact, the way you said it just a minute ago, popularly, omniscience is God knows everything. And then you want to say, in fact, you just said it here, is that God knows everything that is possible to know. What's the distinction you're wanting to make there?
Yeah, the reason I picked that up is because of the sort of current debate, and it's the open theist debate, and we mentioned that already earlier, is that they tried this trick, right, to say, well, we hold to omniscience, even though they denied that God knows the future free actions of us. Well, that's, you say, well, how is that omniscience, right? Well, God knows all that's possible to know, but that's not possible to know. And so I've brought in that and saying, okay, we'll play your game. God knows all that's possible to know, but in scripture, what's possible to know is God knows all things past, present, and future, because he knows himself and his eternal plan, and he ordains all things so that he's not learning from us. He's not dependent upon us. So that's one of the reasons that gets picked up. It's sort of going after, if you want to define it this way, the problem is you're not following scripture in affirming that it's possible and God actually knows all things future to us. And of course, that's what raises the great tension between how does he know that and us being free.
Well, that's my next question. What is the ground of God's knowledge? How does God know what he knows?
Right. Well, this is the, I mean, there's a lot of differences between, we can take it back to Augustine, we can, the Reformed. So in our circles, it's Reformed and Calvinistic theology from then Arminian theology, right? This is the issue that you've got to get
Exactly.
at.
Particularly when it comes to the doctrine of election.
Oh yes, because doctrine of election flows from this, right? I
That's
mean,
right.
that's now applied to salvation. But the big issue here is God's knowledge from himself, right? And that's aseity, right? Well, I think the Bible is teaching that God's knowledge is from himself. It's not dependent upon the creature. So how is that possible? Well, in scripture and in Reformed Calvinistic theology, it's because God's knowledge is tied to his own plan and purposes. He plans all things, ordains all things, thus he knows all things because he is the one who plans it. Now, this is where Arminian theology says, no. What we want to do is we want to say that God's knowledge And so in this case, because it's before there's ever a world, then you bring in this notion of foreknowledge, right? Now, of course, foreknowledge is you know, has to be
It's
tied.
open to definition too,
Open the definition too. But he knows before. So all of the Arminian view is that he knows before there's ever a world. So before you ever exist, right? He has the ability to know ahead of time, not because he's ordained it, but because somehow, of course, that somehow it has to be fleshed
yeah,
out.
that's right.
Somehow, even though you don't exist, he can know what you are going to do, and thus his knowledge of the future is conditioned, or it's dependent upon what he foreknows you're going to do. And that's why, as it eventually shows up with election, you have what's known as conditional election. Conditional election is God knew ahead of time that you would choose Christ. So, on the basis of foreknown or foreseen faith, he then elects you, right? The Reformed view, Calvinist view, is unconditional election. And it's bound up with his knowledge. First of all, his knowledge isn't dependent upon you at all, right? I mean, it's not conditioned upon you. And then, of course, you've got the issues of sin and the need of grace because you do not choose God. But behind that is unconditioned, is all of God's knowledge is unconditioned. It's not dependent upon the world. So now in Arminian thought, this is why the divine foreknowledge human freedom problem is such an issue. It's really not the same way for Calvinists. Calvinists will wrestle with divine sovereignty. If he ordains all things and thus knows all things, then how are creatures free if he's ordained our very actions, right? So that's divine sovereignty, human freedom. But the Arminians, they have to wrestle with, well, if God foreknows ahead of time what we're going to do, then we have to do it.
But it's inescapable
It's
in that
inescapable.
sense that God learns
Well,
in
in
that
their
sense.
view, yeah, he's dependent. Now, in the Arminian view, he is able to know everything of what you're going to do ahead of time. Now, of course, the open theists deny that, and they say, well, it's not even possible to know what's ahead of time. I think the open theists actually are probably more consistent here.
Yes.
The Arminian, I mean, we have to grant to them, they're at least saying, you know, on the basis of scripture, which is what the open theists, I mean, scripture clearly says God knows the future. So the open theists are just denying scripture.
Exactly,
The
yeah.
Arminians, I think, have a problem making sense of it, but at least they're not denying scripture at the point in the sense of God knows the future, right? So we have to give them
Except
credit.
that you do have statements like, with whom took he counsel?
Right.
And if you have him looking ahead and learning from us what we will do and then making his decisions accordingly, then God has learned.
It's a serious problem, and I don't think we, you know, people realize the difficulty with making God's knowledge dependent upon the creature. And so, you know, various explanations have come up to try to explain this. And you know, you have timeless knowledge, so God is sort of outside of time and sees everything at once, sort of like you seeing the parade route at the top of a high building, and you
Yeah,
can.
what is it that he sees but what he created?
Well, and that's the problem too, right? So you're all assuming, you know, things that don't even exist yet that he can.
Yeah, right.
And then some will say, well, he just actually sees what you're going to do. And you say, well, how does he see that? And then, you know, middle knowledge, which is, you know, made very famous by many people, but William Craig and all that, he's got now his theology, his philosophical theology that's hitting the streets and so on, which will be interesting to read. But his middle knowledge, you know, is that, well, God knows all the counterfactuals, all the possibilities of what you would do. But of course, the problem is that given the kind of freedom they're talking about, which you could always do differently, then how would he even know what you're going to do, right?
Yeah,
And
right.
so in the end, the Arminian view ends up with some kind of, I don't know, he can do it. And in some sense, I mean, that's fine as far as it goes. The problem I have with that is that scripture does not say God's knowledge is conditioned. The tension in scripture, or the mysteries of scripture, the unknowns of scripture are not at that point. Who has been my counselor? God is very clear. He hasn't learned from you. The issue is ultimately tied to how he can ordain all things and we be free. That's the accent of scripture, the emphasis of scripture. It's not on God learning from you.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you've mentioned you've bumped into this, but I think I'm going to pick it up next time. And that is under the category of divine foreknowledge and the human freedom problem. We're going to look at Molinism and libertarian freedom versus compatibilism. That's too much for this time. Let's pick it up next time. But that promises to be very interesting, I think.
Yeah, an important discussion. So
Yeah. Thanks again, Steve.
great to
Great
be
to
with
have
you.
you with us. All right, we'll be back next time. Talk about finish up with chapter 18, I think, but we'll pick it up with divine foreknowledge.